You are now listening to the Natural House Call with Dr. Z.
And welcome to another edition. Thanks, Doc. And we're here on this wonderful weekend giving thanks and praise. And we're excited to talk a little bit about herbs to keep you healthy over this holiday season. We want to talk a little bit today about what people can expect, you know, with the winter season and colds and flus and infectious disease. And we all are probably on our way home now from our Thanksgiving gatherings if we're, you know, had an extended stay and hung out with our friends and relatives over the weekend and probably indulged in one or two sweets that we shouldn't have. But we want to talk a little bit about how they view the immune system in ancient times, because I think that plays a big role in understanding the philosophy of infectious disease, even in modern times. Because, you know, there's a big rift in the idea that you are just a victim when it comes to infectious disease. And this goes way, way back in history to the vitalists versus the mechanists. The vitalists believed that the body was alive and had sort of a force field in a way. The Chinese referred to it as the Wei Qi. And this was an early indication that they were trying to understand what the immune system was. Keep in mind that in ancient China, they didn't really do dissections. And, you know, it's kind of hard to dissect out lymph glands and things like that in a, you know, cadaver and whatnot. And it was frowned upon to do dissection in ancient times. Only in Ayurveda were they allowed to do that in certain ways. They weren't allowed to use a scalpel, but they would kind of, Shushruta, the ancient surgeon, would steep the body in, you know, someone who passed away in water and then allow the tissue to just kind of fall apart so that they can examine the organs below. But they had a really hard time understanding the immune system as we understand it today in, you know, Western, more advanced medicine, however you want to term it. But the idea of the greater defensive system is a real historical perspective that we should talk about. So we have many systems in our body which prevent us from getting sick that can break down. And whether you look at it as an ancient terminology or modern terminology, I'll kind of flip back and forth during the program here. we have to look at the different parts of the immune system. You know, Western medicine is like you get exposed by something and you get sick. That's the idea. But honestly, and if you think about it, you know, many germs are always out there, and you know, some of us get sick quicker than others, that's for sure, but some of us don't. So, you know, it's interesting, what's going on in the ones that don't, and what's going on in the ones that do, and is there anything that we can do to take prophylactically besides Western pharmaceuticals to protect our bodies? So we'll start with the ancients, and then we'll move into the modern. So the ancients would be looking at tonifying herbs and herbs that warm the interior and expel cold, and herbs that invigorate the blood. And then, of course, the main one is herbs that get rid of what the Chinese call heat and poison. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll move into what they call the greater defensive system, which is more of a modern naturopathic understanding of what the immune system is. It's more than the immune system, we'll see. It's multiple systems working at one. And then we'll go over some individual herbs that I think people should be taking on a regular basis that are safe effective and help people with, preventing illness from the literature. I mean, I'm not just making this up. It's actually, they've been well studied and even accepted by different governments, like for instance, the government of Thailand endorsing the herb Andrographis for prevention of viral diseases, including I might say, COVID, the first SARS epidemic. But nonetheless, let's talk about the ancient, because we're kind of still steeped in our history. Last 2 weeks, we had philosophy lecture from Dr. Pescucci, which was fantastic. So let's talk about the idea of the tonifying herbs. These are herbs that strengthen or supplement an area or process of the body that is insufficient or weakened. And they strengthen the body's defenses against disease. So these are preventative herbs. So you kind of don't take these when you get sick. You take these on a daily basis, like you would take a vitamin, to prevent yourself from being sick. And hopefully it will work. Sometimes it doesn't. Or you might get a milder case of the cold or flu. You know, sometimes even a vaccine, for instance, gives you a milder case of the illness. And I'm not saying that those are wrong. I'm just saying that that's not our philosophy in my program here. We're trying to cover the herbs so that people can have other options besides getting, their flu shot. I believe that is certainly a right thing to do in some certain cases. But nonetheless, I also think a right thing to do in most cases is to take these tonifying herbs. And so again, clinically, these are used in combination with other herbs. We usually blend an herb. Remember, an herbal formula, when made by a professional herbalist or somebody who is following the ancient ways, where some of these formulas are thousands of years old. And I always say that, if something's been around for thousands of years, it's probably, there's a kernel of truth to it, right? And it's probably been used clinically for many things, and they've worked the kinks out of the formula, so to speak. But they're usually a chief herb or herbs, and then there is usually a tonifying herb as part of the formula, a driver. An herbal formula has a driver, which means it kind of drives it through the system. Whether you want to look at the ancient meridian system in Chinese medicine, which is a system of energy that the acupuncture points sort of guide us as to where that energy flows, or you just think of a system that you can cut someone open and see, a circulation system, lymphatic system, big one for the immune system. These are all systems that we see in the body. And we usually combine that tonifying herb, or what they call a chi tonic. The word chi is used in both Chinese and Japanese. It's qi. In Ayurvedic, it's prana. In other words, it's manitou, like some of the native people in our country called it the manitou. It was kind of like the force in Star Wars in a way. So the strategy is to use these herbs to expel pathological influences for problems when the pathologic influence is strong and the qi is weak. So the pathologic influence, got to remember, Chinese medicine predates the discovery of viruses and bacteria and things like that. But the ancient people knew that there were these pathological influences that somehow you caught, were shared by people. So they, believe it or not, were like quarantining people way, way before they even knew about germs, that there were these little tiny entities called bacteria and viruses. they were quarantining people, and they were also, believe it or not, the first smallpox vaccine was actually done in China I don't know how long ago it was, but it was a very long time ago, way before Jenner. They figured out that, you know, if you expose people to certain weakened forms of the bug, that you can pass some immunity on to people. So they were pretty astute in their writing. Excuse me. And the thing is that they wrote things down, which was really amazing. So the strategy is, again, to use a chi tonic or tonifying herb, and then also use an herb that gets rid of the pathologic influence. And there's different tonics. There's the chi tonics, the blood tonics, and the yin and the yang tonics in Chinese medicine. So I'm not going to go too much into detail about those things. But, you know, some people need the chi tonics. These are when you see the organs or some aspect of the body is weak. It could be the lungs in the case of an infectious disease, or it could be the digestive system in the case of people that, you know, if you had some digestive problems after Thanksgiving, eating all the food, then you know, that might be a sign of needing some extra, what they call stomach or spleen, which the spleen in Chinese medicine is the pancreas, actually, tonic. And so, you know, just deficient spleen and stomach means, you know, you have maybe weakness in the extremities, maybe bloating in the distension in the gut, loose stool, diarrhea. If you're deficient in the lungs, you would have maybe shortness of breath, dyspnea on exertion, weak voice, maybe sweating easy. If you were deficient in blood, you know, you might have pallor or whiteness or weakness. And so, you know, we use these qi tonics liberally in traditional Chinese medicine. And, of course, the most powerful qi tonic is, of course, ginseng. And I think ginseng is something that most people should use on a regular basis. They just have to choose the right ginseng for their constitution. You know, everyone has a different constitution. And one way to know your constitution is, how do you feel on a cold day? Are you comfortable going outside with a light jacket, or do you need a heavy jacket? You know, if you need a heavy jacket, then maybe you need a more warming ginseng. If you need a light jacket, you know, maybe an Eleutherococcus or a Siberian ginseng, which is not a true ginseng, but they call it ginseng in some circles, or an American ginseng would be good. So the regular ginseng or Panax ginseng, called Ren Shen in Mandarin, is very good for, you know, when people are, you know, cold and chilly and have shortness of breath, helps the lungs. So it strengthens the lungs and makes sure that, or at least prevents influences from entering through the respiratory system. And that's kind of what we want to do with, you know, these infectious diseases and viruses and things like that. And sure enough, there are a lot of research. There's a lot of research out there that, you know, ginseng is used for many types of things, including helping the cardiovascular system, central nervous system, but certainly the immunological system too. We don't think about it. We think about it more as like ginseng's for energy. But really, there's a lot of research that shows that it's very effective for the immune system, too. And so, a lot of these formulas have ginseng as their tonic in there. The other big one that's very important in traditional Chinese medicine, and is actually used in people that have undergoing chemotherapy in the hospital there, is called poor man's ginseng. They call it Dong with a D, Shen, Dong Shen. And that one really, really helps with or prevents lack of appetite, fatigue, tiredness, chronic illness, again, the lungs, and strengthens what they call the Wei Qi, which is, you know, what the Chinese considered your immune system. And they have done a lot of work on Dong Shen and looked to see that it actually stops the white blood cell count from going down in patients that are undergoing chemotherapy and radiation with various drugs, including cisplatin. They often will simultaneously give people a combination of poor man's ginseng and another herb, astragalus, that we'll talk about in a bit. But these folks that take it have been shown not to have a drastic reduction in their white blood cell and red blood cell level. So poor man's, and they call it poor man's ginseng because it's way more affordable than regular ginseng, which is rare. You know, in China, it's rare to find ginseng anymore. They actually get more ginseng from America, which is grown in good old Wisconsin. And that's where the large proportion of the ginseng of the world is grown, in Wisconsin. And it's not the wild type ginseng. It's the Americanized ginseng, which is very good, by the way. So we see that. And then we'll cover astragalus and we'll take a break. The other one that's called... Well, you have another one called the ginseng of the lungs. We should talk about that, which is called pseudostellaria. That's the Latin for it. And this is called the prince ginseng or prince seng. And this is often given to people with deficient lung conditions. They catch colds frequently. They catch the flu frequently. They have asthma. Just a weakness in the lung area, and they call it, and it's very moistening. Like if you have a dry condition, you know, we use this for excess dryness in the lungs in the area. And then astragalus, that is what they call Hung Qi, which is the yellow, translates as the yellow plant, which builds the qi massively. And that's the one that I think most people can take on a daily basis. How do I know that? Because many times you put astragalus in chicken soup and you eat it every time you have chicken soup over the winter time, or right now during the fall as we transition into winter. And astragalus, you know, the dose is usually like about 40 grams a day, which is, you know, a lot of astragalus. So people can get it in powder, and or it comes in like sliced root that's about as thin as a popsicle stick. And it looks like a popsicle stick, actually. And you put it in your soup, you cook it, and it's part of what they call change of season soup. But that's the one that really kind of prevents the... help for recovery, tonifies the qi in the blood. So women use it for postpartum to build up their blood, build up their energy after surgery, after chemotherapy and radiation, helping the lungs and the breath. So this is very important, and they sometimes combine it with the regular ginseng for people that are very sick. But then, so we'll take a break, and then we're going to talk, and then we're going to move into, we're finished with the qi tonics. So the next part of the formula for building up your immune system is something that gets rid of what they call heat. And heat in Chinese medicine has been anything that can make the body hot, which includes a bacterial or viral infection. So we'll talk about that as we build our formula up when we return. So stay with us.
Thank you.
we're back with more of the program here, the Natural House Call with Dr. Z. Sorry, I was public speaking, so my throat's a little froggy this weekend. But anyway, I'm feeling great and excited to continue to talk about what we can do for our immune system. What does the evidence show, and what does the ancients say about it? And, you know, is there any research talking about this? You know, we hear on the mainstream media a lot about, you know, getting your flu shot and vaccinations and things like that. And you know, while that's all important, there are other things that people can do, you know, that you can do every day. The philosophy of natural medicine is, what can I do every day? What can I do every second, every time I eat, every time I take things to enhance my health? Whereas in conventional medicine, it's kind of like, well, my body, you know, needs the help of outside forces all the time, you know, whether it's conventional medicine or whatever. But in holistic medicine, we want to harness the power of our own healing energy, our own healing power. So it's a little bit different philosophy. You know, they both can coexist, that's for sure. But we need to focus on both of them. You know, we need to go get our checkups and do preventive medicine, our blood tests, our blood work and whatnot with our doctor. But then, you know, when we have a problem, we want to try to face it and then try to prevent it from coming back again. It sounds logical, but it's just true preventive medicine is really not, you know, studied. Because if it was true, all doctors would learn herbal medicine in medical school, and they just don't, you know, unless you're a naturopathic physician. And they're the only doctors besides traditional Chinese medical doctors that are certified, board certified in herbal medicine. So a little bit of information there. So we talked about herbs that tonify the qi, and that's the kind of, that's things that build up your immunity. The last one I wanted to cover that's very important are the mushrooms. Wow, there's so many amazing mushrooms that we should be taking every day. And we have, my favorites are turkey tail mushroom, which is called maitake. And then we have shiitake mushroom. I was just taking a hike in the woods yesterday, and I was thinking, boy, I have all these logs down on my property. I should just get some shiitake mushroom mycelia and start a little mushroom farm. So I had a flash of brilliance and when I was giving thanks. And yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get my maitakes going. Maitakes already are going. Those are called hen of the woods. And those are phenomenal immunomodulators. And then, of course, reishi grows here. Connecticut has all these mushrooms almost. Chaga mushroom is kind of what grows in a little old birch tree that's kind of looks like a black fungal kind of growth coming out the birch tree. Yeah, really cool. And then, of course, cordyceps, which is grown now commercially. Cordyceps was a really interesting caterpillar to the ancients. It would parasitize and infect a worm or insect or grasshopper, and then, you know, unfortunately take over its body and then just kind of pop out of its body like the Alien movie. I mean, really grotesque. Thank God cordyceps doesn't attack us humans. We'd be in big trouble. But cordyceps is a fantastic plant for energy and vitality. So I like a lot of these power mushroom blends. You can even, that's what I had this morning. I put some mushrooms in my coffee, decided to have coffee this morning because it's a holiday. And, it's like amazing. So it's a blend of shiitake, maitake, reishi, coriolis, cordyceps, all in one blend. So if I sound kind of energetic this morning, it's probably why. but that's, so that covers the chi tonics. So let's move into, we're going to do our ID soon, but we'll move into our very important idea of helping, using herbs that help against heat or invasions, and what the Chinese thought of as heat, and in Ayurveda too. So this is herbs that clear heat and poisons. Because again, they didn't really know about viruses back then. They didn't really understand that there were these entities. They had a feeling, and again, they kind of knew about quarantining people that were sick and things like that. So they were very astute. Also, the Yellow Emperor also, supposedly the village was flooded. Big flood came, and he noticed that the waters, when they were stagnant, because they weren't receding, would breed disease. And so then he got the idea, wrote it in his treatise, that, you know, water that's stagnant is kind of like when our bodies become stagnant. That's why, even though it's getting cold, it's important to continue to go to the gym and exercise, make time for yourself. And that stagnation leads to disease. So movement, continuous movement, and is very important. So I'm looking at the time, and it's, according to my computer, it's just 9 o'clock. And that means it's time to do our ID. So you're listening to WPKN Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, listener-sponsored free speech alternative radio. And you can always keep us solvent by donating some money. And you can donate your car, like we heard, public service announcements and things like that. And you can even learn to underwrite the program, the station, if you have a business. And WPKN.org. And thanks for listening. This is the Natural House Call segment, part of Integrated Wellness. And I'm Dr. Z, Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician and herbalist. Oh, by the way, we're taking some registration for our annual Jamaica trip, which is in March. So if you want to learn about herbs and ethnobotany and have a great immersion into a conference or into the rainforest of Jamaica, yeah, get in touch with me. I'll give you my email at the end of the program here. So, herbs that help with heat. So again, in traditional Chinese medicine, the word poison and heat has many meanings. It refers to fevers and other adverse effects of infectious disease that would make a patient clinically sick. For instance, if you had a swelling that was hot, swollen, and painful, that's considered a hot swelling. If the patient has fever, is sick, that's also considered invasion of heat in the body. So the herbs that get rid of heat and poisons have degrees of anti-inflammatory, anti-infectious, and other effects that help actually kill viruses, bacteria, and fungi. And they've been used even in modern clinical trials and the hospitals in China in many trials against infectious disease. So one of my favorites is the flower of the honeysuckle. This is a really interesting plant. Now, I remember when, as a kid, eating the honeysuckle flowers and enjoying the nectar. And this, they call it floss, F-L-O-S, means flower. The flower of the Lonicera, the Japanese honeysuckle. This was actually part of what they call poor man's penicillin. And I don't know the whole story of when traditional Chinese medicine was first banned in China and then brought back. I don't remember the whole story. if the communists were involved in that and whatnot. But nonetheless, there was a need to get the traditional medicine, the old-fashioned medicine, way up into the villages that were very remote in China, because modern medicine was too expensive and to be set up in these remote villages. So they had to rely back on their old medicine knowledge from yesteryear. And I know they trained doctors, what they call the barefoot doctors, to go up to the remote villages and bring acupuncture up there and herbal medicine to people who needed help and really couldn't afford modern medicine or were too remote, you know. And of course, if they were really sick, they would have to be extricated and go to get modern medicine. But, you know, to really help people, so many people, like if you go on our trip to Jamaica that I'm doing in March, you'll find that many of the people who live in rural Jamaica, up in the mountains, the Blue Mountains, in these regions, they rely on the herbs that grow in their backyard and are in the rainforest and jungle as part of their medicine, as treatment. When they get, you know, if they got really sick, of course, they'd need to go to the hospital. But for most, you know, self-limiting conditions, the countryman's penicillin was what they did, and that's what they called the Japanese honeysuckle flower, the poor man or countryman's penicillin. They would mix the Japanese honeysuckle with another herb that we'll cover in a minute, forsythia, which turns out that we have growing all over Connecticut. We have forsythia. But let's talk about the Japanese honeysuckle. In Chinese medicine, it was used for hot, painful sores and swellings of the throat or eyes, and even other abscesses, and it was used for dysentery and even painful urinary infections and sore throats and headaches and things like that. And they combined it with, I said, the fruit of the forsythia, which is like, so, you know, forsythia is interesting. It's the first thing that blooms kind of in the spring here in Connecticut, turns yellow, and when the leaves aren't even out in March, April. This year it was late. It came out in April, I think. They have beautiful yellow flowers, forsythia. Many people have them as hedges in their house. Who knew that they were? I remember growing up having to trim the forsythia bushes as part of chores. Who knew that they were medicinal? I didn't know that back then, growing up. I was always fascinated by these beautiful flowers. But it turns out once the flowers fall and they start to kind of bud, they would collect the buds. Of course, that would probably damage the leaves if you were to do it on your own bush. But they found that it was, you know, often mixed with different types of Chinese mints and Chinese skullcap and other lung herbs for problems with the throat, and also would be used for getting rid of staph or strep or pseudomonas. This is more modern applications. They've done some studies both in vivo, which means in humans, and in vitro in the petri dishes, and found that it was good for salmonella, typhoid, which forms typhus, or typhoid fever, which is a bad thing, Pseudomonas, Staphylococcus, Streptococcus, and even viruses, the flu. There was a strain of flu, which is the PR8 strain of flu. I'm not sure which one that is, but it had a powerful effect in deactivating the outer membrane of that virus. So this is the flower of the beautiful Japanese honeysuckle. And there was actually in China, they take herbal medicine one step further, and they actually inject herbs into the body. We don't do that in America here too much. They do it in Germany, but we're not as advanced in using these preparations in medicine. But they gave it to patients who were very sick with pneumonia. They actually injected the herb into different acupuncture points that corresponded with the lungs, and they found that it was very effective in helping these people with acute severe pneumonia and also bacillary dysentery. And then in ophthalmology, there was a study where 63 patients who had conjunctivitis used the honeysuckle flower, and they compared it with using neomycin, which is a commonly prescribed antibiotic for the eyes for conjunctivitis, you know, when you get that red soreness, injected conjunctiva, and it was as effective as the antibiotic. So I love when they do head-to-head studies of herbs and antibiotics and show that it was as effective. It just goes to show you that, you know, Mother Nature always creates molecules that have antimicrobial effect. And, you know, and then, of course, it was always combined. Oh, well, how much do you need to take? Well, you know, depends on the preparation that you buy. You know, we can't name commercial names because it's non-commercial radio, but you can find what they call 5-to-1 extracts. So if you put in your search engine, Japanese honeysuckle 5:1 powder, you'll find a couple brands. And the you need about, you know, a couple grams of this thing to really work. Up to 30 grams is safe in a day, which is a big dose. So it's a very safe plant. Doesn't have any drug-herb interactions that I see here in the literature. In preparation of the show, I was looking at any drug-herb interactions for listeners. So you want to look at it and see it. So then the next one they combine it with is, again, the fruit of the forsythia. This is fantastic. We all have seen those forsythias. And this, again, was, you know, great for the first sign of the flu or cold when your, you know, throat gets a little sore and, you know, you feel like you're coming down with something. This is the time, boom, to begin to use the fruit of the forsythia. And it can be combined with, again, the Japanese honeysuckle was a famous way to combine it, and different types of Chinese mints for various infectious diseases. And they would often also combine it with the Chinese golden thread, which is kind of like a cousin to golden seal. We'll talk about that in a bit, for mostly infections in the intestines, you know. But this had really strong, when they combined it with the Japanese honeysuckle, again, the poor man's penicillin, like I talked about, they found that it was more effective against typhus, streptococcus, than just the forsythia itself. So when they combined the herbs, they had a very interesting synergistic, and they found that it was very weakly effective against spirochetes, which leads me to believe that maybe forsythia could be studied to treat Lyme disease. You know, we don't know. We don't know yet. There have been some herbs that have been looked at for Lyme disease, but we still have to do clinical trials on these herbs for them to be accepted in mainstream medicine. But certainly there's some literature that shows some activity against spirochetes. And until we get that really cold weather in Connecticut, I'm sure the ticks are still out there. We only had like a couple days in the 20s, right? So they've even studied it in people with you know, the flu and dysentery. Again, that poor man's penicillin was evaluated in China and really many conditions needing antibiotics. That's what they gave people. Again, the dose, you know, you try to get the strong dose. I get a 10X powder, which means that every one-fifth of a teaspoon gives you 10 grams of the herb. And the, you know, typical dose is about 30 grams of the herb. So, you know, you're not going to be able to make a tea out of this and it to be effective. That's the other thing about herbs. You know, a lot of the studies on herbs, they're not planned on by people that use herbs in their daily practice in medicine. You know, they're done by academicians who really have no knowledge of treating patients. And so they often set up these trials using way little herbs as far as dosing. And they wonder why it doesn't work, you know. Well, most of us that have used botanicals throughout our career, like licensed naturopathic doctors, know that we need to use, you know, 15 to 30 grams. And even amongst my colleagues, they still struggle with dosing, you know. But most of the studies show that you need to use a strong dose of these botanicals. And I have a lecture that I did, and I'd be happy to send it to email patients. I'll give my email out at the end, and you can email me, and I'll send it to you. This gives you all the doses and other things like that. So it's time for a break. Let's see, it's about 1:15. When we return, we'll finish talking about the herbs that clear the heat and the poisons, because we have a few more to do that are very important. Even our dandelion here is considered an amazing plant for our immune system. And who knew? You know, who knew the lowly dandelion? Not too lowly, but people have spent thousands of dollars with pesticides trying to kill the dandelion from their lawn instead of embracing this plant. So when we return, we'll talk more about herbs to help you stay healthy over the winter season coming up when we return. And we're back with more of the program here. Thank you very much for joining us. If you're just getting up and tail end of the Thanksgiving weekend, or you're on the road heading home, thanks for tuning in and listening to the program as we talk about herbs to help. And there's an ancient legend prescribes the treatment for the common cold in China as a small wood fire is ignited in the hearth and allowed to burn until the coals glow orange-red. The afflicted patient is readied, and a middle-sized ember is removed with tongs, and then the patient, like, kind of builds a chair over, like, close to the embers and covers themselves with woolen blankets and I guess, animal skins back in the day, and they start to sweat. And that can free the body of the exogenous invading influence. So, you know, besides just herbs, another thing people can do is to do what's called hydrotherapy. If you have access to a sauna or hot tub, you can also help by getting your temperature up. That's an interesting way to talk about that. In the ancient book, A Treatise on Febrile Disease by Shan Hong Lun, and also Chang Chong Jing, the great medical scholar and doctor of the Han Dynasty, they believed in using fever treatments. And it's interesting, even now, there's a Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who has a great YouTube channel, by the way, promoting her. No financial interest, but she's just great. And she talks about the powerful immune effects of doing fever treatments, of raising the body's temperature. So whether the body raises it on its own through a fever, or you do it synthetically through getting in the sauna, just taking a hot bath if you have no access to anything like that, that, believe it or not, releases these things called heat shock proteins, and that has been helpful for people getting sick. There are some studies on that, using sauna and to prevent flus and colds, that was done by, of course, the Scandinavians, who love to jump in their sauna and then cut a hole in the ice and do that. And who knows how it's working? Maybe the saunas are helping people breathe easy, or I don't know. But certainly the release of the heat shock protein is a very interesting modern-day phenomenon that, you know, we didn't know about this maybe 30 years ago, but the heat shock protein seems to be helpful for our immune system. And even there's even studies. There was a study that men who used the saunas 2 to 3 times a week had 33% less were 33%, excuse me, less likely to develop dementia than men who didn't do saunas. Now, what's that all about? Who knows? You know, maybe it's a cardiovascular thing. Maybe it's removing endogenous poisons, because when they do check the sweat of people in the sauna, they are actually excreting environmental poisons. They send it to the lab, and the lab uses modern mass spectroscopy and gas chromatography. They examine the sebaceous, or the oily secretions from the sweat glands. And yes, various toxins are excreted. These are toxins that we find in everyone's fat tissue, petrochemicals, solvents, etc. So who knows if that's involved? But anyway, it also seems to help your immune system, too. Again, maybe it just raises your own body's temperature, and that can release cytokines. I know years ago I was involved in a study called the Healing AIDS Research Project out in Seattle when I was a medical student in the early 80s. And we had groups of men. This was before they knew about the cocktail drugs that, you know, save a lot of patients with HIV's lives. But back then, the only thing that they had in medicine was AZT. And so we, you know, besides giving the men immune support and things like that, we put them in the saunas and we raised their temperature. And we could actually prove, and it was published, a change in their helper T cell function after doing the clinical trials on what we call hyperthermia treatments or heat-induced hyperthermia treatments or, again, fever treatments, inducing a fever where there is none, because we're always afraid of fever in Western thinking medicine. We think fever's bad. It's not bad. It's good. It means that the body's doing something. It means that the body's fighting. So it depends on your interpretation. Don't take a Tylenol the first sign of a fever. Let that fever, unless it gets too high, of course, you know, so you have to be the judge. But if you can, like, let the fever go during the day and then, you know, maybe modulate it at night so you get a good night's sleep, maybe. I'm telling you, it's going to help a lot with these, your immune system. And anyway, I diverged a little bit from herbs because during break, I was reading about all the benefits of saunas, and I think that would be a nice little health holiday present for families, because the prices of saunas have gotten way lower. They have these portable saunas that you can basically, for like $150, you can just set it up in your house, you know, and then fold it like a tent. It's amazing, these infrared saunas. So I think that there's a lot of science behind infrared saunas, and I think that could be powerful. We don't know how they work exactly, but so back to our little discussion about herbs for the immune system. So another one that's fantastic, again, are all of the cousins to the golden seal. So golden seal is a small little plant. It's you know, it was common here. We don't see it as much anymore because it's been over-harvested. But we have, in Connecticut here, we have the barberry, which is an invasive plant. And, of course, out west, they have Oregon grapefruit, which can be invasive, too. And this was always used for antifungal, antiviral, anti-inflammatory, cold and flus, chronic sinus problem, all those types of conditions. And golden seal or golden thread is what they use in traditional Chinese medicine, because I guess that plant is more popular there. Or there's a big tree called the phellodendron, not philodendron, which is the kind of tropical tree. This is called phello, P-H-E-L-L-O, dendron. That has the highest level of the antibiotic alkaloid known as berberine. See, these alkaloids are these bitter substances in plants which often are the source of many drugs. For instance, one of the most common alkaloids that people use every day is caffeine. Another one would be morphine for pain, or ephedrine, or atropine to restart the heart or to dilate your eyes at the eye doctor. So the use of alkaloids in medicine is very important. The, one of the treatments for glaucoma was the discovery of an alkaloid in the plant called pilocarpine. So many of these alkaloids from plants have become modern-day drugs. Of course, we've been able to synthesize them, but we haven't yet synthesized the berberine too much. We mostly get it from the herbs. But berberine also has been shown to be probably better than any diabetic drug that's been developed. It acts like in ways that diabetic drugs don't even work yet. Like, for instance, changing the gut flora seems to help a diabetic with their blood sugar. So by changes in the gut flora, because berberine tends to kill off the bad bugs and leave the good bugs alone. And of course, now we know that a lot of our immune system is in our gut. So maybe a tweaking of the flora is something we can do a couple times of the year. We do it in holistic medicine, but maybe this is new and you never heard that. But tweaking your flora by taking the golden seal and then maybe a good probiotic. Maybe you could take the golden seal. Like some doctors, they do the golden seal or the berberine complex for a week and then take the weekend off and then go on the probiotics and then do another week on the golden seal, so on and so forth, until you see really good changes in your digestive system and even the stool. But anyway, as far as colds and flus, this is something that, you know, we have given even people with sinus infections. A golden seal is a champion herb for sinus infections. So then we get to elderberry. That came into interesting fruition during the COVID pandemic, and there are some interesting human studies on using this particular wonderful plant that grows in the bogs. Like you'll always find this growing in the bogs in Connecticut. Elderberry is, there was a clinical trial in 2019. It was actually a meta-analysis of many clinical trials. So that meta-analysis is where they take data of all the clinical trials and they throw out studies that were done poorly or don't have enough people or were biased and whatever, and then they kind of make a decision. And it's entitled Black Elderberry Sambucus nigra supplementation effectively treats upper respiratory symptoms, a meta-analysis of randomized controlled double-blinded clinical trials. And this is Complementary Therapeutics Medicina 2019. So they talk about here that, you know, upper respiratory symptoms are often treated with OTC drugs, antibiotics, antiviral, but there's a demand for alternative solutions. The black elderberry has been used to treat the cold and flu, but we need to look at larger scale studies and meta-analysis. So this analysis looked at over 180 participants and, you know, evaluated so they threw out a lot of studies, but they kind of concluded that there were some studies that actually showed that this was really good. So we know that the elderberry was used for, this. And the elderberry fruit, we usually get like a 50-to-1 extract. And it comes in lozenges, and we can take one every hour. And that's amazing. And you can get it in a syrup. I would stay away from the syrup that has a lot of sugar in it, though, because the other thing that has been shown to worsen people's immune system is when they overconsume sugar. There was a study in the 70s. I wish I could find the reference. I'll have to look for it. But when people consume sugar in different forms, and I mean even orange juice, you know, orange juice, maple syrup, white sugar. I'm not sure if they did corn syrup back then, but it all caused a lowering of the white blood cell count. And I think I've talked about that many times on the show, but it's always worth repeating because there's new listeners. And that's called lazy leukocyte syndrome. So where the white blood cells are usually very vigorously grabbing hold of bacteria and lassoing them and taking them in and destroying them. But when you eat sugar, even though it tastes good, the white blood cells just sit around and they don't do anything. They just like watch the bacteria go by and they become lazy. It's interesting that the researchers coined that term. I love it. Lazy leukocyte syndrome. Leukocytes is a fancy name for the white blood cells. So a way to get rid of that, if you're not allergic to ragweed, because it turns out that people that are allergic to ragweed can take this next plant we're going to talk about, but this is echinacea. Now, the Australians have done the most research on echinacea, particularly this guy named Kerry Bone, who's a personal colleague of mine. I've met Dr. Bone. We invited him to lecture at University of Bridgeport when I was a professor there, and in the year 2000, a long time ago. And I remember him lecturing about some of the research, and he talked about the myths of echinacea. So echinacea is a great, great plant to use, but there are many myths about it. Like one is you can't take echinacea every day. That myth somehow, I don't know how that myth started sometime in the 90s, but you know, he disproved it in his research. Wrong. You can take echinacea every day. Don't take echinacea to prevent things. Just take echinacea to when you get the cold. False. You can take echinacea every day to prevent things. Another myth was don't use echinacea for autoimmune disease. False. It was used for those types of things. And another myth was you can take small doses of echinacea and that works. Wrong. It's interesting, the clinical trials on echinacea, the ones that failed, they gave tiny doses of echinacea, whereas the clinical trials where they gave big doses of echinacea worked great. The other myth is that, it's not a myth, but how to use echinacea, the first sign of a cold, you just take it every hour. And usually that's enough to even sometimes abort the cold from coming on. So, and again, be careful, because if you're allergic to ragweed, you should not use echinacea. You can have an allergic reaction because it's in that kind of family. But echinacea enhances the white blood cells in their ability to engulf the bacteria. So it reverses the lazy leukocyte syndrome that I talked about before. It also stimulates the T cells, but yet also balances the immune system. So that's why it was used for people with lupus and RA, and because there's a myth out there, don't take echinacea for autoimmune disease. That's been disproven, and even clinically for scores and scores of years, people use it for those types of things. So we'll take another break, our last break, and then we'll finish up our program on things, herbs, and things that you can do to stay healthy this winter coming. So stay with us. Cielo, divino resplandor, silencio. We're back with more of the program here last segment. And did you know that there was a major study on green tea and flu? Now, this is something that you'll probably never hear on the mainstream media, but of course here on WPKN we talk about these things. And this was a study. Let me get the reference here. It's kind of small here on my computer here. Yeah, green tea. So it was published in the Journal of Nutrition, 2011. So nothing new, right? But this was an interesting study. Green tea consumption is inversely associated with the incidence of influenza infection amongst school children living near a tea plantation in Japan. So they say here in the abstract, green tea is known to contain antiviral components to prevent flu infection. Wow, that's pretty bold to say that, but that's amazing. A limited number of adult clinical studies have been undertaken, but there is a paucity of clinical evidence in children. So we conducted a study to determine the association between green tea consumption and the incidence of influenza amongst school kids. So they looked at lots of kids, 2,000 kids, and they ranged from 6 to 13 years old. And they threw out some variables and things like that, but pretty much they found that, you know, 1 to 5 cups of green tea may be very helpful. More than that didn't seem to, you know, benefit people. And less than, less than a cup a day, they were also, those really had no significant association with benefits. But so 1 to 5 cups of green tea may prevent flus in kids. Now, I mean, could it be the same in adults? Maybe. I'm not sure. Certainly good for you and certainly could benefit you in many, many other ways. So for sore throats, instead of reaching for that sore throat spray, maybe try some sage. It's interesting, very timely, because many of us use sage to cook our dressings or stuffing. I guess people call it stuffing too, with their turkey or their whatever they had vegetarian Thanksgiving too. But it turns out that there are antiviral properties of sage called safisinolides, and they're excellent for sore throat relief. And if, I guess, you know, you've been speaking a lot and you use your throat a lot, you can gargle with that. I use it a lot. I'll probably do it after the show here, after talking for 2 hours, and then I talked, you know, all weekend. So it's really good for that sore throat. So make some sage tea, do a gargle, and that would be amazing for your health there. So a few more, and then we're going to sign off for the program here. One of the big ones that we didn't talk about is my favorite, and that's called the King of Bitters, Andrographis. Now, there has been some very good, solid research that this plant can actually shorten the duration of a common cold. You know, sometimes if you use these herbs when the cold is already well set in the body, there's nothing that is going to really help. There's nothing modern, there's nothing holistic, there's nothing herbal that's going to help. Just time gets you better, and your immune system taking the time to get rid of the virus and get rid of the system, reboot the system. But believe it or not, Andrographis in the clinical trial shortened the duration of colds in half. So maybe you're, instead of having a miserable cold for, you know, a week, it shortens it to 3 days or so. Now, the Health Ministry of Thailand approved Andrographis paniculata in a Japanese formula, which was called Senshinren, for COVID-19 and other viral pandemics, including chikungunya, dengue fever, because again, in these warm countries, this becomes the rainy season, and the rainy season brings more mosquitoes, because of course it's warm there, and more of the mosquito-borne ailments like dengue, a horrible thing to get when you're in the tropics. And particularly in Malaysia, where they did these studies on dengue and even malaria, this was shown to be one of the most effective plants. So this is one of the plants that I would highly recommend people get to know of. You can get it in a capsule. They don't call it the king of bitters for nothing. Very bitter. But remember what we talked about earlier on, the very bitter plants, like the dandelion, for instance, the very bitter plants are the ones that seem to be very good for our immune system because they have some of these bitter glycosides, it's one of the chemicals found them, and bitter alkaloids, which of course we know many alkaloids have become prescription drugs. So they're very interested. The pharmaceutical industry is very interested in alkaloids. They've always been interested in alkaloids. Opium's an alkaloid. Ephedrine's an alkaloid, which we now find in Sudafed. Pilocarpine and Jabirundin are alkaloids that are used by the eye doctors. So many alkaloids that are used in medicine, but These things that make these plants bitter, there's something to that, that's for sure. And according to Chinese medicine, bitter plants are cooling, cold, and cold gets rid of heat. And most of the times when you get a cold and flu, it's invasion of a microbe or whatever, and you get heat. Well, I guess that's the body's response to that particular thing. So a couple more, and then we'll finish. There's one called izatus that we didn't talk about. Now, izatus, they call it woad, dyer's woad, because it was used to dye wool kind of black or really like indigo. And it's actually the chemical indigoferrin that was isolated from the izatus or the dyer woad. You can use the root or the leaf of the dyer's woad has been used to even fight infectious hepatitis and many things like that. They say it clears heat and detoxifies the fire poison used for warm febrile disease or epidemic outbreaks, particularly affinity for throat and lungs in Chinese medicine, and gets rid of heat blotches and psoriasis. By the way, I've used it for psoriasis, and it's pretty effective. Combine it with the Japanese honeysuckle, which we talked about there, and other herbs to help people. Now, this one, they've actually done long clinical studies against bug bacteria that were resistant to sulfur drugs, and found it was effective against leptospirosis, another spirochete, and also treatment of encephalitis. They did these studies for encephalitis and had a cure rate of 98%, full disappearance of symptoms within 3 to 5 days. Treatment of viral diseases in a study of 100 subjects, they actually used it to prevent viruses in this other subjects that drank the tea of the leaves of this particular plant, the izatus plant. Did not get sick. And then they combine izatus with dandelion root. Were given to 150 kids with the flu. Signs and symptoms disappeared within 4 to 5 days. Well, like I said, that's kind of cutting things in half about. So, well, I hope that you enjoyed the program and learned a lot about the plants that you can use. I would say for preventative things, the mushrooms and the astragalus and the chi tonics are probably the most important things that you should research. Or, again, consult your naturopathic physician for more details, because they are the experts in herbal medicine. and most doctors don't know anything about herbal medicine except to stay away from it, because they don't learn about it in school. They're not board certified in herbal medicine like a naturopathic physician is. So I want to wish everyone a lot of health, and hopefully they had a fantastic weekend. And now we move towards the big holiday crunch. This is an important time. The sun is the lowest, so keep up with your vitamin D levels. That's very important for maintaining health. And but also don't forget about taking these botanicals and your vitamins and herbs as we approach the winter months, where a lot of people get sick. So I'm going to sign out now. Remember, we have our next ethnobotany excursion in Jamaica coming up in March. You can get more information on my website, drznaturally.com, or ecotoursforcures.com, and you can always email me. If you want an emailed copy of my presentation on herbs for colds and flus, I'd be happy to share it. You can spell out Dr. DOCTORZ naturally at gmail.com. That's Dr. Z naturally. I'd be happy to email it to you, any listener out there. And if you have a good book that you read, a good guest that you've encountered, a good book on health, and you want me to interview the author, please let me know. I'm happy to do so. We have a great engineering staff at WPKN that can make it happen and help me. Well, until such time, stay healthy and happy, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Is FC Buzz on WPKN Radio. A brief look at what's happening around Fairfield County.
This is David Green with the Cultural Alliance of Fairfield County and our weekly selection from FC Buzz Events, the best guide to arts and culture in coastal Fairfield County. Find it at culturalalliancefc.org. Through Sunday, 10 to 4, it's the Wilton Historical Society's Great Trains Holiday Show. Enjoy model trains, holiday cheer and family fun at one of Wilton's favourite holiday traditions. Explore the Historical Society in all its decorated glory and find multiple layouts of model trains that wind their way through miniature winter landscapes, vibrant towns and mountain tunnels. The show has something for everyone through January 16th. Wednesdays through Sundays through December the 31st. Norwalk's Lockwood Matthews Mansion Museum opens its Holiday Wonderland at the mansion. Usher in the holiday season and view the exhibit recognized by USA Today as one of the 10 best holiday historic home tours in the US. Capturing the magic of the holiday season with historic era tree displays, a 19th century skating scene, a festive holiday dinner party, magnificent gowns, and more. Sunday at noon through December 18th, join Bridgeport's Downtown Cabaret Theatre for a special rendition of The Santa Story. This wildly popular cabaret original is the heartwarming and hilarious story of a young Christopher Kringle and his journey to become Santa Claus. Perfect blend of music, mayhem, and merriment for the whole family that's sure to have you ringing jingle bells this holiday season. Sunday, 1 to 5, the Carriage Barn Art Center in New Canaan opens Deck the Walls with Artists Sunday. This holiday exhibit includes a wreath auction and sale and small works exhibit. Over 40 one-of-a-kind wreaths created by designers, artists, and others will be on display in the gallery and auctioned online. Bidding runs through December 3rd. The exhibit is an annual fundraiser that features a juried selection of original art as well as limited edition prints, cards, and other artisan-made items. On view through December 10th. Sunday at 3 o'clock, join the Norwalk Public Library for a Jim Clark music series, a musical Thanksgiving. It's a free concert featuring Jim Clark, accompanied by David Childs on piano, Andrew Mensch on bass, and Jim Royal on drums. Tuesday, 7 o'clock at the Westport Library, author and Westport resident Amanda Freeman will discuss her debut book, Getting Me Cheap, How Low-Wage Work Traps Women and Girls in Poverty. Freeman and fellow sociologist Lisa Dodson spent more than a decade talking to workers who make possible the conveniences on which we depend, and they share their research in this lively discussion. Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. at Fairfield University's Quick Center for the Arts, Open Visions Forum, Espresso, presents Stephen Revellino, The Playwright and the Goddess, Arthur Miller and Marilyn Monroe. She was the legend of the silver screen who broke the mold of international stardom. He, arguably, America's greatest playwright. Join Broadway producer Stephen Revellino for an illustrated presentation on the life and times of two of America's most famous artists during their five-year marriage. For details on these and hundreds more events, check FC Buzz Events at culturalalliancefc.org.
This was FC Buzz on WPKN Radio.
Hello, this is Monty Alexander. If you love jazz, reggae, and all the great music under the sun, you have your radio in the right place. 89.5 FM, WPKN, Bridgeport.